Well, the BizNews portfolio has taken a bit of a hammering in the last few days, not surprisingly. It's because the rest of the world has taken a hammering. But one stock that hasn't is Easy Equities, or better known as Purple Capital. Chief Executive Charles Savage is with us. Hey, I'm so pleased that we have this stock in our portfolio. You'll find out why in a little while. You know, every 6 months when we get together and have a chat, Charles, it just becomes more and more obvious to me that things reach a tipping point, then the momentum continues, and it's almost like you've got to really do something wrong now to derail the Easy Equities train. It's certainly when I have a look at the financial results that you've just released now for the 6 months to the end of February, it looks like everything is rolling in the correct way. Is there anything in there that hasn't gone right in the past 6 months? Because pretty much the numbers seem to suggest that it's all plain sailing right now.
Yeah, look, Alec, it's been a wonderful, I think, 18 months now. I think this momentum actually started 18 months ago. And anyone who's been tracking your podcasts and my interviews with you, I think, would have got a hint of what was to come. And so this has been a resoundingly successful period for us, built on strategic intent more than macroeconomic forces. And so this really is about the execution of strategy rather than, you know, economic tailwinds. Having said that, we've had some economic tailwinds. So, you know, markets were up in the period prior to the Trump, you know, travesty, but also interest rates were slightly down in the period. And those are two macroeconomic forces that give customers confidence to invest more, lower interest rates and rising markets. But, you know, this result is thanks to people and strategy and a lot of purposeful intent that has, you know, been built over the last decade of Easy Equity story, which you know well. So I'm exceptionally proud of these set of results. They're the best we've ever delivered. But still, they hint of what's to come. You know, you said it when you opened. We weigh the beyond our tipping point. The business is now scaled. There's momentum everywhere you look in the income statement, in the strategy, in the client acquisition rates. Everywhere you look, there's momentum. And momentum is a powerful force. And the team are not being complicit or complacent with the responsibility we have to deliver and continue to execute with this momentum behind us.
So what about the events of the last little while? Is that something that could derail you?
No, look, volatility is always good for an investment or trading business in the short term. So, you know, typically what it means is there's more activity, and as a result of activity, you know, your revenue goes up. So in the short term, it's really good for the business. If it sticks around too long, then it starts to destroy customer confidence, and then it can have a negative impact. And so you've got to take a view on how long is it going to stick around. You know, is Trump bandstanding to drive markets down, to bring in, to reduce inflationary pressures, and fundamentally to get interest rates down and rebase the economy and reduce his debt? And if he is, then the grandstanding should be over in a short period of time. You know, that's the one kind of view you can take. Or alternatively, these trade wars are going to continue for a long time, in which case they are going to destroy consumer confidence, and with it, the threat of a recession is very real. Now, you know, if I stack up the probabilities based on what I know and what I've seen, I think it's 70-80% chance that this won't stick around for long. That this is Trump negotiating with the world, resetting, you know, trade standards, and he'll get and fundamentally he wants his tenure to be successful, and the clock is ticking. And so the quicker he can get back to business and growing the economy and share prices going up, the better. But fundamentally, he needs lower interest rates. So, you know, I'm optimistic that this won't stick around for long, and that the chance of a recession is a low probability, you know, 15-20%.
The company, though, the Purple Group, or maybe we should just focus on the Easy Group because that's where the action is, it's increasingly looking like a financial services business now. When you mentioned earlier trading business, and that's where you started. But the launch of mortgages recently, your crypto operation, your property operation, Is that the strategy? Is that the strategic intent that you've got now, what's it, over 2 million registered clients, over 1 million active clients, that those 1 million active clients want to get services across the financial board?
Yeah. So, you know, if I unpack it, you know, what is our opportunity? We have 1 million active customers, which means we've got zero cost to reach that customer base. And our runway to more customers is probably about 8 million. So if you look at the tax-paying base of the country, it's about, you know, 7 to 8 million. So we've got a lot of runway for growth in acquiring more customers. And you saw our acquisition rate, I think, was 30% in the last 6 months. So we've got more work and more room to grow, 10x the number of customers, if you like. The second opportunity to grow the business is that you've got a million customers who've fallen in love with the business and the brand and trust us explicitly by virtue of the capital they leave on our platform. And because they trust us, our ability to sell them other products and services is just so much easier. And the incremental cost of doing that is close to zero. And so now what we're doing and what we have been doing, you know, quite substantially for the last 3 to 4 years is understanding what other needs they want us to prioritize and deliver to. And so, you know, in the last 5 years, we delivered crypto, which was a client need. We delivered easy properties. We delivered easy credit so they can now leverage their portfolios. Very, very small leverage, only 30% loan to value, but with the insight that they don't want to withdraw money for an emergency. They'd rather borrow at a reasonable rate. We've delivered Easy Protect Life, so life insurance built for investors, and it's by far the cheapest place that you'll buy life insurance if you're a good investor. We've launched products like I'm trying to think of others that we can launch. We launched robo advisors in that period to help people, you know, structure their advice. We've launched international access to markets. We've launched unit trusts. We launched ETFs. We've launched this plethora of services that fundamentally increase our ARPU, our average revenue per customer, but only increase the cost to serve our customer very incrementally. And so it's a two-pronged attack. You know, one is go out and get 8 million customers and keep progressing towards that. And secondly, keep listening to your customers and delivering to their financial needs. And in the result, what do I think we'll look like? Well, I think we're the sum of, you know, Sanlam, Old Mutual, Investec, now 91, you know, with a sum of Discovery Bank and Capitec. You know, we're going to fulfill all of our customers' financial needs on their journey to wealth creation. And I guess the difference in our strategy from the brands I've just mentioned is that our strategy is build it where there is a differentiated product to build, or partner it where there's no need to build it. And so we've partnered Capitec, Discovery, Telkom, Satrix to deliver on some of these needs. But in other instances, we've built product to satisfy our customer needs because we don't believe there's a good enough product market fit or product fit for our market. So it's a two-pronged approach. And then the final piece to that is, you know, you and I have discussed this a lot, but we've built an incredible South African franchise. And as that franchise grows and it unlocks more capital for growth, and, you know, just speaking to that, if anyone reads the results, they'll see we're sitting on 170 million of capital for growth, which, you know, in my tenure as CEO, that's the biggest number ever that we've had on our balance sheet, which means I've got the ability to invest in growth, marketing, product, services, or alternatively acquisition. So we are thinking about how can we acquire our way to faster growth. But the pieces we still haven't unlocked is, you know, when do we stop winning the Curry Cup? When do we go and win the World Cup? And whilst we're very silent in these results about our international aspirations, that is purposeful. We want the storyline is South Africa. That's where the growth is coming from. And that's where the business is delivering, you know, on its mandate. But the undelivered part of my mandate is we still need to deliver a global business at some point. And, you know, the better we do in South Africa, the more opportunity it unlocks for me to think more globally.
It did look to the outside from an external perspective that when you were so focused on the international side, that your local side fell back a little. I'm sure you learned lessons from that.
Yeah, you know, Alec, I think it's a fair criticism, but not a it's misinformed by the simple fact is that for the last 10 years, 90% of our resources have been deployed in South Africa, whether you count that in capital or in the actual employee base of the group. So we have been very focused on South Africa. You know, what coincided with our international aspirations was the interest rate change in interest rate environment. So we went from, you know, interest rates doubled at the same time that we were deploying capital to international markets. And that was coincidental. And had we had the foresight, you know, potentially would have delayed our international aspirations. But having said that, we have learned a hell of a lot. You know, we're constantly learning more about how to access those markets, Philippines and Kenya. Kenya, we're licensed to enter now, and that's good news for us. So we will enter that market. And the Philippines, we continue to work with the regulator. But it is, you know, if I'm scoring my own batting card, you know, I've got, it's the one piece where I just go, geez, Charles, now you have not delivered on the international mandate. And the reason that it wouldn't be disappointing if it wasn't informed by the simple fact, when we reviewed by international peers, and their only criticism is, Charles, but why only South Africa? Because the capability that you've built is world class. And that's the truth. We've built a world class capability at a very low cost in a very small marketplace. And so that is we have to go and deliver this internationally. Having said that, I don't want to detract from the simple fact. There's 10x the opportunity in South Africa. And so we must retain our focus on the South African opportunity. 90% of our time and resources have got to stay in South Africa. Another interesting fact is 80% of all of the success we need to achieve over the next decade, those customers have already arrived. And so it's in delivering international growth, we mustn't get distracted from the extraordinary growth opportunity that remains in South Africa. And really, that just becomes, in international growth, just becomes another flywheel for additional runways for growth that then survive the South African growth story, you know, in a decade or so out. So, you know, I don't want my talk of international opportunity to be misunderstood as moving or shifting strategy. We're not. 90% of everything we do is here at home and building this business and the opportunity we see right in front of us and the customers we've already acquired, over 1 million of.
It's an extraordinary story, and anybody who wants to go and have a look at the numbers will see that, especially now you're growing at 20%, 25% plus, and the revenue is growing and the much faster than the costs are growing at, so you have that wonderful crocodile jaws effect in the correct way. But if you listen to the media, you listen to the economists, you listen to all the stories about South Africa here, this is a country that's had GDP per capita, which has been flatlining for 15 years. Everything's supposed to be going wrong in the country. So you've got the macro picture looks pretty gloomy, but on the other hand, you've got Easy Equities that is outperforming. Who's losing in all of this? Or is it really a narrative that you just don't buy into?
Yeah, I don't buy the narrative. So, you know, a decade ago, that was the dialogue. South Africans were poor savers, poor investors, macro environment didn't support a savings or investing culture in the country. And if we'd listened to that, we'd never built Easy Equity. So a decade later, we've proven everyone wrong. You know, 1 million customers, the nearest second biggest stockbroker today is less than a tenth of our size. And they had much more capital. They've been around much longer. They've probably got a much smarter team than we have. But they believe that narrative more than we do. And so we went out and built a business against that narrative. And what do we find? And every single day, like this last week is a great reference point. You know, the dialogue of a decade ago was that when there's market turmoil, retail investors run away from it. So they exit at exactly the wrong time and they, you know, they take their capital out, they panic. Well, what did we see? Well, you know, we've had the 5 days of just Trump travesty or some, I don't know what we could call it, Trump Thursday it started on. And what was the result? Well, 91 million rand of retail money arrived yesterday, in one day. And when we analyze that, those, you know, firstly, where did it come from? These are retail customers that are, I would have thought, are fully invested. And, you know, the dialogues, they'd run away. Well, they've clearly been sitting with capital on the sidelines, waiting for a market entry, and they found it. And so they're doing exactly the opposite to what the dialogue of a decade ago was. I don't buy the narrative because I think it conveniently fits the business models of the past. And so for us, we focus on, you know, we focus on what we see from the customer data that we and behavior that we enable, and we build strategies around that. And I pay no attention to the narrative. The only thing that is interesting to us from an external point of view is there is a direct correlation between people's propensity to invest and the level of the interest rate. That's for sure. And, you know, literally for every interest rate hike, commensurately deposits went down. For every interest rate decline, deposits have gone up, which just means that our customers are servicing debt while investing, which I get, we all are. That's a South African narrative. But, you know, this is the opportunity to change that dialogue and build a different framework for South Africa is ours to own. And I think I've said this before, but, you know, my only regret is that the outcomes of easy equities are going to really be felt 100 years from now. Just imagine what the compounding effect of getting millions of South African investing will look like 100 years from now. And what they'll look like is hundreds of millions of Buffetts running around. And at some point, someone's going to say, how did this transformational change happen? And I'm hoping that in the answer, someone says, because easy equities made it their strategy to make it so 100 years ago. And that is, you know, everything, every data point that we review and reflect on after a decade supports the fact that South Africans were waiting for the right investment destination for their capital, one that embraced them, welcomed them, made them feel part of the journey and didn't try and disintermediate them with costs or language or sophistication. And so it's such an exciting place to be, and it's such a privilege to serve our customers at this, you know, point in our journey.
Oh, I love this story and exactly the way you've put it. And knowing you for long enough, I know it's authentic. There's a lot of people would... their marketing department would be sitting in the background whispering into their ears and saying, oh, say this, say that, say this. And you've said exactly what the marketing department would like you to have put across. But I know that it is authentic and genuine. But maybe there's something else, Charles, just going back to reflecting on what you said a moment ago. The story always is the professionals get it right, the amateurs get it wrong. The professionals sell, and then the amateurs get left holding the puppy. But that perhaps is of a time before the amateurs had information. And today, information I have, or the information that somebody down the road has, is exactly the same as the information that the most esteemed analyst on Wall Street would receive. We can all go on and listen to the quarterly reports. We can all get that information simultaneously. And I guess that has leveled the playing field a great deal and maybe transformed the whole thought of, well, the retail guys always get screwed. They always come to the party late and they always get it wrong.
Yeah, look, I've never met an advisor who's smarter than his customers. And I've never met an asset manager whose, you know, IQ outweighs the capital that he, you know, that he manages. So I'm afraid that the opportunity has always been there for customers to take control of their money. But you're 100% right. Access to information was the differentiator. And that's the fields have been leveled. I tell you what's also changing the game, and this is what I'm excited about for the next decade, is that AI now enters. And so now the ability for a retail customer to leverage AI as their advisor, as their investment analyst, is extraordinary. And now those who embrace AI, their IQ to manage money is way higher than those that don't. And that opportunity is democratized. You and I can do it. I do it every day. I use AI every single day of my life to enable myself, whether that's in investing or giving advice or helping me, you know, consider results, my results and what to say. So AI is a huge accelerant for that. And so this is not going to slow down. It's going to accelerate digitization, is going to accelerate as a result of AI. One point I want to potentially just bring you back to, because I just thought about it now and we didn't reflect on in the results, but you highlighted the sort of crocodile jaws opening. You know, there's a line in my CEO letter that says the following: for every 100 Rand of revenue, 70 Rand now flows to the bottom line. And, you know, what I would challenge people to think about is, you know, what does that do to the business going forward? It essentially allows us 70% of all of the revenue that we produce either flows to our bottom line or immediately returns itself to us to invest in growth and opportunity. And that is the differentiated position we now find ourselves in, is that, you know, for every small improvement in revenue, it creates a very large improvement in our profitability or our ability to invest in growth as an organization. And these results reflect that. You know, prior to these results, we were talking about a PE of 50, around about 50. As a result of these results, the PE we're now talking about is 20. So we've more than halved the PE in one result cycle in 6 months. And what people need to reflect on is that that's not going to change. We've not evidenced it in the last 18 months. It's been coming. And because we have these wide crocodile jaws, our ability to grow the business faster, deliver growth capital much quicker back to the business, while also delivering better profits, gives us a highly differentiated position in the market. Because anyone coming in now, for every 100 Rand they invest, they're going to get zero return for their first period. And in time, they might get 10 Rand or 20 Rand. We're getting 70 Rand. And I think that's our biggest strategic advantage, is that operating leverage that we now have and this ability to turn revenue into profits, or 70% of revenue into profits.
It's an overnight success that takes decades. And clearly, that's exactly what we're seeing now. We see it at BizNews as well. It's a similar thing where all of the Warren Buffett story about every day you do something that imperceptibly expands your moat. And one day you wake up and you say, wow, what's happened? And of course, once you get the momentum going, as you have now at Easy Equities, it just flies. But one of the things that I'd like to just dwell on a little bit was the whole decision to go for fractionalizing investing. I know that Shift are moving towards that at some point in time. So the message is certainly landing. But from your perspective, it's always been a case of, well, if you want 1,000 Rands worth of Amazon shares, you can buy them. Or 1,000 Rands worth of Prosus shares on the JSE, maybe a better example, you can buy them as well. Where did that inspiration come from, and how difficult was it to put it together?
You know, Alec, it was, you know, we didn't invent it in the sense that our customers led us there. If you remember, we ran a game right at the start of Easy Equities. We ran a game and we gave everyone a small amount of capital. And the game didn't have fractional shares. So they had 10,000 Rand to invest and they could invest in the JSE. And what we found is that people wanted to buy Naspers. The Naspers was a 2,000 Rand stock, but they didn't want to hold 20% of their portfolio in a single stock. And when we interrogated why, it was obvious. And guys, we just don't have enough capital to own Naspers. And if we're going to own it, we're going to own it disproportionately to our portfolio. We're going to have too much risk, not enough diversification. So that was the insight that came from the game. And I turned around to my team and I said, guys, that insight, actually, I used the following analogy. I said, we're creating this expectation that we're going to democratize share investing. And we're going to open up this superstore, and those with less capital are going to be restricted to shopping in the aisles that they can afford to buy rather than the aisles that they want to buy. And those with capital, rich if you like, can shop in every aisle. And I said, I'm afraid that's not democratization. And so we will not launch this business until we solve that problem. And it took us sleepless nights because we had no solution for it. And eventually, and I don't know whether it was one night or six, I can't remember, but I think it was about 6 weeks of kind of sleepless nights, I found that in America's had fractional shares forever. They just had never bothered to digitize the shares. And so I came back and said, look, guys, I found the answer. Let's do it. And it's the one thing, you know, lots of people, my favorite question that you ask a successful business is, if you took one thing out that would destroy your business plan, what do you think it would be? And that's the one thing. I can say this with 100% confidence. There would be no easy equities without fractional shares. I can't say that of anything else, of anyone or any other product. You could take me out. You can take out lots of our other products and services, and the business would survive. But if you took out fractional shares, the whole business plan collapses. And so thank God we paid attention to our clients' friction points, which, and the simple desire to own shares that you couldn't afford, was what drove us there. And today, it is part of every single platform like ours, DNA. But proudly, we were the first in the world to ever do it.
So in the past period, in these 6 months, you have launched mortgages as well. I mean, we could go into each one of the 10 sub-brands and get some insights there. But how well has that gone? You've also launched exchange-traded funds, which could be a huge area. How well has that gone? And then finally, cryptocurrency, given, you know, those are three very exciting and very interesting areas. How did they perform, those three areas, in the past 6 months?
Yeah, so I'll start with crypto. I mean, it's had a great run. You know, it's almost produced a full year of revenue in the first 6 months. So if you look at 2024 full year revenue and you compare that to the first 6 months of this year, it's almost matched those numbers. So it's had a great run. And that's, for me, that's the most exciting asset class in the group. And, you know, why do I say that? I think it's the simple insight that crypto is here to stay. It's now institutionalized, and it's reached its tipping point in terms of adoption, institutional adoption, and it's now going to be a lasting framework of the financial landscape. And we own a significant portion of that in the South African landscape. So our opportunity in crypto is enormous. I mean, as one business line, the opportunity to be the dominant crypto player in this country is massive. And, you know, we think the similarly to the UAE, institutional adoption is starting to happen. We're going to see the launch of the first ETF in the next probably 12 or 18 months, and that'll accelerate adoption. And we're going to be right at the center of that stream, and hopefully at the front of that stream. So crypto is the most exciting asset class in our kind of DNA or makeup. Then, you know, talking to the other easy ETFs is built on the following insight. We think that that unit trust's time is up. It's a product structure for the old world. And that over the next two decades, three decades, the transition from unit trusts to active ETFs will be exactly the same as the playbook from passive was, you know, in the last two decades. So, and that's played out in the US as well. And we want to, that is a retail opportunity. Unit trusts are typically owned by retail customers. And because we've got such a strong retail brand, we want to be at the front of that stream. And that business got very close to $1 billion in assets in, you know, the 6 months that it's been alive, which is a, you know, very good result. I think it's ranked two or three in terms of size and, you know, against some pretty healthy competitors. And so that's also an exciting asset class for the next few decades. It's not crypto. It's not going to be, you know, it doesn't have that that kind of adoption or excitement about it, but it is something for the future. And then easy mortgages is really just the matching of our client distribution assets with the desire to own property and to ensure that they get the best interest rate in the market. And so, you know, if you like, what we are is a shopping cart for them to express that desire. I want to buy a 2 million rand property. Who's going to give me the best interest rate? And for us to ensure that they get the best interest rate, because as I said earlier, ensuring they get the best interest rate means they've got more money to invest, and we can make money out of that marriage, you know, matching them with the best interest rate or the best bank. But also we're incentivized to ensure they get the best interest rate, because then they've got more propensity to invest. So that's got off to a great start, but it's small numbers and it won't show up on our income statement for quite some time. But all the business units delivered in this period. You know, some delivered exceptional headline growth in revenue and profit. And you know, the ones that really stand out, Easy Equities, Easy Crypto, and Easy Retire Rise. Those three businesses all stood out because of headline growth numbers and profitability. But all other businesses, if they didn't deliver in revenue, they delivered in strategy. So Easy Property is a good example. They delivered Easy Mortgages. Easy ETFs delivered three ETFs. And so, you know, it's not just about revenue. It's also about making sure we're putting on new rails for new revenue opportunities in the future. And they're exciting opportunities, but not all of them will deliver in income statements to come. They're going to deliver in the decades to come, like easy ETFs. But it's just so lucky to be able to deploy our strategies across these various verticals and to see them come to fruition in very short period of time. I mean, just to remind everyone, the first year of Easy Equities, we acquired 10,000 customers. You know, today we acquire 1,000 customers every day. And if you think about, if you're a business born into the Easy Group today, you have the unfair advantage to go and talk to 2 million customers on your first day of birth. And you go, like, that is, as an entrepreneur, I just want to build more businesses that can speak to 2 million customers. We just got to keep making sure that we deliver to these customer needs by building better products than what are out there. And the business will just continue to, you know, go from strength to strength.
And what businesses are you going to be building that you can tell us about in the next reporting period, which is the next 6 months?
Yeah, that's a good question. I mean, there are two businesses in the group that are fairly new that I want to put much more effort into scaling. And that's Easy Credit, which, as I said, is the ability to borrow against your portfolio at a radically cheaper rate than what your credit card is going to charge you. That business has been in beta for 18 months. It's about to come out of beta. We've made some really nice improvements on it, and I'm really looking forward to selling that better in a lower interest rate environment. So I'm excited about what that can do. And then Easy Protect Life, which was our life insurance product, also just come out of beta. And there's a huge unsold opportunity there to convert our customers to our life product. So those are the two that are built but haven't been seen that I'm putting a lot of time and energy in. Then there are two business verticals that I'm also excited about building in the next 12 months. The one is Easy Retire Retail. And essentially what that is, just in short, is allowing advisors to marry our platform so that they can onboard customers and their assets to Easy Equities, but also so that they can sell to our customers so we can give them access to distribution based on customers raising their hands and saying, I need some help with this tax or, you know, product, etc. So we are going to partner advisors in the years to come, and we started building that platform, and we hope to launch it around this time next year to advisors. And we've got very significant advisors who want to be first, so they're kind of queuing up to say, please, can we be first, which is really cool. And then the other business line that I'm heavily involved in that I think has got huge opportunity is a subscription offering, which allows you to buy more value on Easy Equities without having to play our behavioral loyalty game. You know, we've got Thrive, which is allows you to get lower brokerage and lower access to the platform. The insight is there are two types of people. One who respond to behavioral, behavioral gamification, if you like. And then there's others who just say, Charles, just charge me and give me the benefit of that behavior. And so Easy Subscriptions is about allowing customers to buy exclusive access to the platform up front and say, I don't want to play games. I don't want my behavior gamified. What I want is to pay you whatever, 100 Rand a month, and now give me value for that 100 Rand a month and I'll buy my access point. And I think that's, you know, if I look at our competitors globally, specifically Robinhood with their Robinhood Gold product, they've done very well at using subscriptions to annuitize the higher value customer base. And we've taken indicators from them or leases of their pages or books, pages of their book to say, I think it's time for us to do that. So those are two, if you like, small shifts. One, let's partner advisors, allow them to access our platform. And two, let's give our customers privileged access to the platform through a subscription system. Both of those will launch in the next 12 months. And, you know, the third thing is just much more attention for me on international. In one of the luxuries, benefits, privileges of having a scaled business with an extraordinary team is I've actually got less to do now than I had 10 years ago. And so in less to do, I've got no excuses in delivering on our global aspirations in the years ahead. And so, you know, I'm 100% accountable to ensuring we deliver on that aspiration as well. So, yeah, super exciting time to be, one, to lead the business, and two, to serve our customers.
Yeah, it is really lucky when you've built something from the ground upwards and you've got the scalable, you're in a scalable situation where you can then focus on where you add the value. But before you go, and this 35 minutes has just whizzed by, as it always does, Charles, when we have an opportunity to have a chat. I see you've moved into WeWork. That's interesting. I was a huge fan of WeWork back in the day. And I know you guys have had a few different locations. Last time I thought Mill Park, you had quite a serious operation there. What was the appeal?
Yeah, so like what wasn't the appeal, Alex? Firstly, you know, we've got 250 staff around the world. 150 are in South Africa. And of that 150, 100 are in Joburg. So, you know, that's first, you know, how do you service this global staff base and give them a place to call home? That's not easy when you're our size. And WeWork does that, you know. And I tell you an insight, the cheapest place in the world to buy WeWork is South Africa. And you get all of the global privileges. So my team can pitch up with a WeWork card that was paid for in rands in South Africa, anywhere in the world, and get a desk and get a serviced office. And so, you know, we've got staff all around the world that now have WeWork access. And it's just it's hassle-free. Not one minute is paid towards managing office infrastructure, which is clearly not our business. So just unlocked. And I would have said when we owned offices, at least 10% of our time was spent managing the infrastructure that supports an office. So it's unlocked so much value for us. And the other thing that's unlocked for me, which again is just, and the team, lots of the team have done this. Traveling doesn't mean you need to stop working. And you can, our head of treasury went on a 6-month, and we couldn't afford to lose her. She's young and she's dynamic and she's, you know, she's very good at what she does, that we didn't want to lose her for 6 months. We understood the need to travel though. And our response was, why don't you just work and travel? And, you know, obviously on the days you need to take off, you take off. But on the days that you've got nothing to do, just work. And she was going to travel for 3 months. She ended up traveling for 6. So she did what she wanted to do in longer time, but she worked the whole time. And, you know, wow, I wish I was 25 entering a workplace where they gave you a WeWork card and said, Charles, it doesn't matter where you pitch up and, you know, do the work. So WeWork has unlocked that for us. And, you know, it's given us incredible value. And unlocked a lot of our time. And I never have to worry about anything that has to do with office space or infrastructure, which is a great privilege.
Well, let's maybe one day the people of WeWork in South Africa will open a branch in Hermanus and I might be able to entice you to come down here a little more often. But thanks for that, Charles. It's been an interesting journey watching you. It's didn't by any means over, so we'll be chatting again in 6 months' time. We're very happy to have the Purple Group in the portfolio. The last couple of weeks have also shown the resilience of your share price, because pretty much everything else has fallen on its back, whereas the share price of your company has stayed solid. And I guess the message is finally getting through. People are kind of getting it at last, that what you've been saying and what the model is, the exponential model, is sustainable. It's got scale. And now I suppose it's up to just making sure that you don't put your foot on a landmine somewhere. Otherwise, you really are moving in the right direction. We'll talk again soon, but thanks, Charles. Just a final parting shot, second half of the year, a similar kind of return, 25% revenue growth. Are you looking at that?
No, we want more. Like, you know, the nice thing about starting well is it gives you the confidence, cadence, and momentum to end better, in my view. So, no, I'd like to deliver a better 6 months. And, you know, I've got the luxury that we've waded through March. March is an extraordinary month for us. It's actually always, and anybody who follows us on social media or anywhere who's read our results will know that March is always our biggest. And March delivered 1.7 billion in deposits, which was 300 million up on February. And February was an all-time record. So, you know, with 1 month in the bag, I've got the confidence, and 6 months prior to that, I've got the confidence to say, yeah, we are aiming for better results towards the end of the year, and got no excuses. come what Trump might bring. So it's, you know, it's an exciting period for us to be in. I think one thing I'd like to say to your viewers and anyone else who listens to this is please take the time to read the CEO letter. You know, we've spent an extraordinary amount of time trying to unpack the strategy so that everyone can understand it, in the hope that if you do understand it and you buy into it, it's, you can then access it very easily. You know, you could buy the shares on the platform. And at R1, you know, you don't have to sacrifice too much to get a decent stake either.
Well, you can put R10 in and get 10 shares, I suppose. what's the minimum investment and on the platform?
R1. I think it's zero. There's cents. You can buy 10 cents if you like.
50 cents. No minimums. Charles Savage is the Chief Executive of Easy Equities, and I'm Alec Hogg from BizNews.com.